Hello, my name's Coral Ibrahim. I'm the founder and managing director of The Ready House. This is Untalented by Unknown and Canva.
We're going to start very basic here, my brother. Imagine I'm a 14-year-old girl. Now, can you explain what you do to this 14-year-old girl?
Okay, so if you're a 14-year-old girl, we work with brands or businesses with physical locations, and we make them famous by building community.
Okay, I want to ask you, what is one thing that you can point to in your career that accelerated your progression?
Single-handedly, it's a line which stuck with me actually from my dad, which was never reject a coffee. And I think it wasn't necessarily about acceleration, it was just about exposure to rooms that I had no business being in very early on in my career, of never rejecting a coffee, always going to extract value, and subsequently carving out my very first role from never rejecting a coffee. So that's how I did it. But I guess I think it's this idea of just continually being curious, and meeting people.
What does somebody earn that is at the top of whatever it is that you do?
When people ask me about what is the maximum you can earn in the industry that we're in, we often look at kind of counterparts, and our business is still on that establishment road, so we're not necessarily at that level yet. But north of 150 grand, I would say, is where you're at if you are in a really senior position in our industry. However, I must say that if it becomes something that you end up chasing as the first point of satisfaction or the first gratification, it becomes the enemy in the long run. And not to be stereotypical about it, because I know everyone says follow your passion, but I think at the same time, if you can strike gold with it being a passion, something that you're good at, and there's money in it, then that's the sweet spot. So let the expertise become first port of call. And my advice is that the money will then come, because when you carve out that niche and that expertise, it then follows on.
What is the one retail brand that irks you the most?
I would say department stores. I'm not going to necessarily name a brand. I mean, a lot of them have subsequently left us, less of a dire kind of term. But these idea of department stores have such an obsession with transaction and shopping, and the idea that people come here to try and replicate or at least replace what people are now doing online, as the fulfillment. So it's naivety, it's arrogance. We need to be seeing consumers, or department stores need to be seeing consumers in more articulate, more layered perspectives.
A buzzword in marketing that you'd happily retire.
This is a really difficult one for me, because we talk a lot about community, but community.
Thanks for the honesty. Favorite example of a physical space that feels like a digital platform?
This is interesting. There's lots of really great examples, Equinox being one, Soho House being another. If we use Soho House as an example, I think they get a lot of things wrong, but I think they also get a lot of things right. And that was almost the counterbalance. They have a very clearly articulated community that translates incredibly well digitally. And from the art that they curate to the books that they put on show to the furniture that they design, it is a walking, living commentary of the locations that they're in, the interests of their members, but they translate that digitally. And there is a complete seamlessness between their storytelling in the physical and their events that they run and the storytelling that they have digitally.
What does it take to design a retail experience that feels both local and globally scalable?
So one of the things for sure is that we're not retail designers. There are amazing businesses out there that obsess over the intricate nature of and the flow of a consumer through a retail space to optimize purchase, to think about different moments of story, even a simple little hack like in Tesco's picking up products as you're checking out, because the amount of pickup revenue that you get from that's all designed and strategized. We don't step into that territory. What we focus on with our big landlords is public realm and empty space. And with our brands that we work with who have physical spaces, we focus on their stores. And what we think about is the cultural layer, the gooey bit in the middle, which allows that to be the voice and the opinion of where their community will unite around. So how you design that in a more tactical way is that you think about the cadence of events. You think about how we activate on that. For example, do we give a booth in the corner of our shop to one of our most famed influencers to do a broadcast as a broadcast hub of where they're almost uniting their community? They've got they've got people logging on digitally for a live stream, but they've also got people there in the physical, and they're hosting an event, a live walkthrough in their actual space. They're adding cultural value to the audience logging online and also there physically. Maybe there's a perk if you're there physically. And there's in and amongst all of these more tactical outputs, we've got to think about how we don't just copy and paste from one shop to another. All of it is around local cultural fabric. What works for, let's take Blank Street, what works for Blank Street in Manchester might not work for Blank Street in Liverpool Street. And I think that's almost the poison chalice at this point, because when something works quite well in one location, the typical property view or brand view is how do we copy and paste that to another location. You've got to understand local zeitgeist, local nuance, people's behaviors, their attitudes, what they're earning, their income, their interests. These all influence then the actions and behavior of the brand.
How do you embed social media thinking into the physical retail environment from day one?
So we started off with social media. That was our obsession, organic social media. So a lot of the things that we often talked about was around social sharing, social moments, but being social first. Now, social first is the thing at the moment, right? But something we've been hanging our hat on for the last 10 years. And what that kind of means is, how are you creating and optimizing every single touch point for a brand almost to be worthy of a social share? And the only thing I can evaluate it against is almost what the old adage is, which is like the holy grail of all marketing is word of mouth recommendation. And I think how that translates digitally, if we can have more moments that are serendipitous, meaning a beautiful surprise, a delightful surprise, something that wasn't expected, then that's what will drive more social sharing and more social commentary. If it's expected, it won't be shared.
What is the weirdest thing that you've used ChatGPT for?
Weirdest? Yes. Finding out everything there is to do about travel guidelines being pregnant. For my wife. So just speaking and understanding and going to weird deep rabbit holes about Zika virus and why Zika virus even exists and what does that mean and different locations you can and cannot travel. But a fun fact, 2 weeks ago, I actually went off retainer with my law firm and went to a project only kind of basis, because everything I used to ask the law firm about, review this, what should I be mindful of in this contract, is just completely taken care of within seconds between ChatGPT. So not necessarily a weird use case, but something that has completely diminished a whole retainer for a whole business and completely serves that need for me. So yeah.
What is the slogan of your life?
A really lovely quote: the less you know, the more you think you know. The more you know, the more you have to learn.